Well, certainly it's a devastating loss to finally have given up Mariupol for Ukraine, and I wouldn't say that it's the end of Ukraine's claim on Mariupol. They'll certainly intend to get it back. But like you said, it was an important strategic turn to prevent the Kremlin's greater success in Donbas, frankly. They've prevented the encirclement of Kharkiv, they've prevented the encirclement of eastern Ukraine, and of the Ukrainian troops there. So the last stand of the soldiers who fought for Azovstal made such an important difference in the tide of what's happening in this war. And so hopefully now what we'll see is a prisoner exchange where Ukrainian soldiers who are defending Azovstal will get returned to Ukraine, because right now, of course, they're being held in captivity in Russia.
Peace talks are right now at a standstill, but the evacuation of the wounded soldiers from Azovstal appears to be a kind of a step forward in the process of diplomacy and negotiation. But Vyacheslav Volodin, the president of Duma, said that members of the Azov battalion should not be exchanged with prisoners of war, but should be put on trial. Certainly, this negotiation process will be a complex one.
Absolutely. And what we know from what we have seen so far is that the Russian side cannot really be trusted in negotiations. They make all kinds of promises that they then don't keep. So I think it's important right now that the Ukrainian side stands strong, and that the European allies of Ukraine support the Ukrainian position, whatever it is. That position, I believe, will continue to be a prisoner exchange for the soldiers that held on to Azovstal. The Russian side and Russian social media has been calling for all sorts of heinous things to against the Ukrainian soldiers who fought there. But quite frankly, this is a Russian aggression. This is unprecedented Russian aggression. So, as far as I'm concerned, those soldiers must be treated with absolute dignity and respect, much in the way that the Ukrainian side has treated its Russian soldier captives.
How would you describe the current moment of the war? Is one of those deadlocks in which none of the enemies is interested yet in peace, but rather in a sort of leveraging a future negotiation with the advantages on the battlefield? Is one of those moments?
It's hard to say. This everything in this war has been fairly unpredictable in terms of, seeing what could happen next. There's certainly a lot of possibilities. I mean, I think the Ukrainian position will remain to, a defensive one. That's how it's been. I know that the Ukrainian priorities have remained the same, not negotiating to give up any territories, which they should not have to do. Like I said, Russia has not been a trustworthy actor in peace negotiations, so there needs to be a lot of caution about that. I'm fearful that Russia is sort of reorganizing its forces to make another stand. We know that they have continued their shelling across Ukraine and also in the territories that are hosting Russian soldiers now. So there's certainly many things that might happen. I know that the city of Odessa is rather on edge right now. They've seen an uptick in bombings and shellings lately. And we've known that one of the possibilities that Vladimir Putin might want is to try to create this land corridor across all of southern Ukraine. That's something that I think is certainly still on the table, but at the same time, the lack of Russian success in other parts of Ukraine might prevent him from doing something dramatic right now.
Professor Emily, Channel Justice, what effect is this war having on the complex Ukrainian social texture, social mosaic? There are Ukrainians with Russian and non-Russian ethnic origins. Both languages are spoken. Has the opinion of those who were, in the first place, close to Russia before the war changed for generations to come with this war?
I think so. I think that Russia, Ukrainian hatred toward Russia, it didn't really, it wasn't always that strong before, and really not that many people felt that Russia was an enemy. But now all of Ukraine thinks Russia is an enemy. People don't see themselves as having any connections with Russia. They see themselves as totally different people now. That's something that, the damage of that, I think Putin maybe miscalculated a little bit. He thought that there were so many Ukrainians who spoke Russian that Russian soldiers would be welcomed, and that's certainly not what happened. And the reason for that is because speaking Russian in Ukraine does not make you Russian. It doesn't make you pro-Russian. It doesn't make you anything. And so I think that was a grave miscalculation. I'm sure that people in Ukraine will continue to speak Russian. It's their language too. But many people have also switched to speaking Ukrainian. They feel more Ukrainian than ever before, and they feel that Ukraine is very distinct from Russia in ways that they, didn't necessarily think before. So that will certainly color Ukrainian identity and self-identity for years to come.
How will Ukraine look like the day after the war in economical and political terms?
Well, there's certainly major, infrastructural damage, damage to resources, damage to people's housing, damage to schools. All of this will have to be, funded and rebuilt. The economy has been damaged. Largely, the agricultural sector has suffered a lot from this war already. So there's going to have to be major global investment in Ukraine in order to rebuild once the victory is secured. We've seen already lots of Ukraine's European partners who have suggested that they'll lend money. Some have already sent money for these reconstruction efforts. So I hope that the world continues to kind of support Ukraine after that. Politically speaking, I think it should be an interesting situation. Ukraine had a lot of political pluralism before the war began, including a rather strong presence of pro-Russian political parties. Those political parties have now been banned, and they will not, I'm sure at least not in the next decade, be allowed to stand for any elections, at least for the near future. And it will be very curious to see if the kind of political sphere in Ukraine is more united than it's been before, more, less diversity within different political parties because of the war.
And do you see a Ukraine on the short term, on the near future, totally or fully integrated in the European Union, or that day, despite all the positive and joyful statements in Brussels, is still far away in time?
I think that Ukraine's European allies owe it to Ukraine to take its membership application seriously. Ukraine has protected Europe from the most significant menace that the entire continent has seen in the last, 50 years. So Ukraine is, I think it is owed to them to be taken seriously as a partner in Europe. Certainly Ukraine's economy will have to be rebuilt, but Ukraine has shown that it wants to be part of Europe. There's no more that it can do to show that it deserves to be part of the European community. So my opinion is that it certainly should be accepted into the European Union. Whatever requirements that need to be met with, I understand that they can't currently be met, but the symbolic gesture of Ukraine's official Europeanization, it's significant and it goes very far these days.
What about Zelensky? Is he the Ukrainian Churchill, or is he the Ukraine and likely modern hero who will mark the next decades of the Ukrainian politics?
He's certainly been, he's done so much more than I'm sure he expected he would have to do. He's been thrust into this role that he never signed up for. And he's done an admirable job. He faced a lot of criticism at the end of 2021. I believe that that's one of the reasons Vladimir Putin chose to invade when he did, was because his perception was that Zelensky was not that popular at that time, which frankly he wasn't. But the way that he's handled everything, the way that he has stood so strongly for Ukraine, he has represented Ukraine so well on the world stage, and his advisors have also done a very good job. The team he ultimately put together has really done a fantastic job. And so I think in that sense, he is influencing the nature and the face of Ukrainian politics. He's been the leader that the world really needs to see right now. And I think he'll go down in history books as somebody, he's the David who stood up to Goliath. And if he hadn't done that, things might have been really different in Ukraine right now.
Professor Emily Channel Justice, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for your questions.